Oh, my sweet plan friends, what a year it has been. Here we are, the end of 2020. Boy, oh boy, I'm thankful that it's coming to a close and I'm excited for 2021. And in thinking about it, there's a real silver lining that 2020 has given us, and that is the ability to truly understand the power of plants and how they can help us relieve stress and cultivate more joy in our lives. My goal for Bloom and Grow is to help everyone successfully care for plants for that exact reason, to make the world a kinder and greener place. Okay, so on the flip side, let's have some real talk right now. There is a dark side to the hobby of plant care. There is a moment in all of our lives as plant parents, we've all been there, where our passionate hobby teeters that thin line between joyful and stressful, where we've fallen so deeply in love with plants, we can't stop thinking about them, we can't stop bringing them home, we're growing our indoor jungles. And then we hit this moment where we realized, oof, I think I have too many plants. I brought too many plants home at once. Or we go through a season of life where we can't just have the time or mental capacity to care for our collection, and then we feel disappointed in ourselves. I have totally struggled with this and initially thought that my struggles with plant parent overwhelm had been unique to me and that I was an outlier in our community. But after hearing from you guys in our listener survey, through DMs and emails that I've heard from you and in our Patreon Zoom calls, I know that this moment of plant parent overwhelm is something we all struggle with, and therefore we all need to start talking about. So we're going to take a look at it today in several different ways, and I can't think of a better way to wrap up season six than getting honest and vulnerable with you guys and also providing some really amazing insight and tactics to helping us all bloom and grow in a healthy way. So welcome to this very special episode, the final one of season six, episode 111 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Oh, plant friends, I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks, and I am showing up today recording this for you just steeped in gratitude, if that's a phrase. I'm so thankful to this community for the beautiful year of blooming and growing that we have all had. It has not been the easiest for many of us, and I'm so thankful to have been a small part of your journeys in 2020, and I hope that this show has helped you in some small way, whether it's helping you troubleshoot, empowered you with knowledge, or just made you feel like part of a community. Speaking of community, I wanted to thank so many of our new Patreon plant friends: Julia Orlando, Mimi Wang, Jerry Hoover, Spencer Verstig, Jeff Shang, Claire Freeman, and Min K. Yu. Thank you, plant friends, for becoming Patreon plant friend supporters of Bloom and Grow Radio. For those of you that don't know, Patreon plant friends are a community of our listeners that support the show monetarily on a monthly basis, and you guys help me bring the show to thousands of listeners around the world, and I'm so grateful for this community that shows up for me, and it inspires me to keep showing up for you. So thank you. And if you're interested in supporting the show, why don't you head on over to the show notes and click the link to learn more. Okay, today's topic, plant parent overwhelm. We're diving deep, plant friends. We're getting real in a very special format of the show that you don't usually hear because it's the last episode of the season and I wanted to make something really special for you guys. So we're going to cover various aspects of plant parent overwhelm today in a few different ways. So you're going to hear about my personal experience with it. You're going to hear what I've learned from our community about it. You're going to listen to some really amazing clips about the science behind the chemical reactions happening in our brain that affect it, and then we'll talk about the strategies to cope with it. So this episode is really important for me to air for our community because I'm so obsessed and thankful that I get to help this community grow their indoor jungles and cultivate more joy in their lives, of course, but I also take that role as somewhat of a responsibility to help us hopefully all grow in the healthiest way possible. And as I continue to hear from members of our community about their struggles with plant parent overwhelm, whether it's buying plants out of budget, struggling to manage growing plant collections, feeling like plant parent failure, which we know has all hit us in moments of struggle, we've all been there. The more I hear, the more I realize that this is something we have to talk more in depth about. And I keep going back to one of my absolute favorite episodes ever aired on the show, episode 43, called Your Brain on Plants. And in it, I interviewed Dr. Caitlin Vanderweel. I call her the answer to my plantiest and expertiest of dreams. Caitlin is not only a plant lady and a listener of the show, but she's a really fancy neuroscientist with years of expertise in understanding how emotions and brain chemistry influence decision making. And we had the most amazing conversation about literally the science behind the chemical reactions that happen in our brain and how those affect us developing our plant care hobby, and the conversation is just going to shed so much light on your habits because it really did mine, and you're going to hear because I get real vulnerable. So the flow of this episode is I went back and I pulled my favorite clips from that episode, and I've kind of strung them together in this portion of the episode. It includes me and my personal struggles and her kind of showing me what was happening in my brain, and then kind of a deep dive in the science of what's happening as we bond and grow with our plant collections. And then stay tuned because on the other side of the clip section, I'll meet you and we'll talk about strategies that we can use to help battle overcoming the overwhelm. And I will also talk about my plant pause and several tips that I've put together for you if you are interested in going on a plant pause if you need one. I've also turned this episode into a full blog for our community to refer back to whenever you need a little review in case you hit that moment and you just need something to read and you don't have time to re-listen to this. And the blog is in the show notes. Okay, so before we dive into the episode, I just want to give you some context that was leading up to the conversation that Caitlin and I have that I'm about to play for you. So when I first started out growing plants 3 years ago, I went through a real addictive moment where I dive more into what was happening in this interview you're about to hear. But I was constantly buying new plants, going to new plant shops, researching plants on the internet, and I was just getting a little obsessive and it was becoming a little unhealthy. And Billy actually had to have like a little baby intervention with me in our apartment when the plants were all over the coffee table and there was no rhyme or reason to how I was organizing them and bringing them home. So Billy slowed me down and he asked me to go on a plant pause for 6 months where I couldn't bring any plants home. And that plant pause really changed the trajectory of my plant collection and frankly, this podcast, because I probably would have burned out as a plant parent if I didn't take it. Also, quick disclaimer here, neither Caitlin nor I are therapists or psychologists. Caitlin just has a PhD in neuroscience, and this conversation is just two plant friends nerding out. So if you do feel like you have hit a moment where you are getting unhealthy, you are feeling unhealthy, I highly recommend reaching out to a licensed therapist or a licensed psychologist and getting help. All right, now that we've gotten all those cards on the table, here is Dr. Caitlin Vanderweel. Thank you so much, Espoma Organics, for being a loyal partner of Bloom and Grow Radio. Espoma Organics is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. So plant friends, if you've tuned in to the podcast at all this year, it's no surprise that I have adored Espoma Organic products for a long, long time. I originally fell in love with their indoor houseplant liquid fertilizer years ago because it solved all of my fertilizing problems and stress with its easy dose cap and liquid mixture. And now I'm really just in love with their entire line of potting mixes and horticultural sprays as well. So in regards to overwhelm that we're talking about on this episode, I love that I don't have to stress or spend any time thinking about which brand of potting mix to use or how to measure out my fertilizer. I know and trust that Espoma Organics has high quality organic products that are designed to set my plants up for success. They have a whole line of potting mixes from their general potting mix, which most of my plants are in, their cactus mix, which Limey is in, their African violet mix, their orchid mix, and their fabulous seed starting and raised bed and garden soil mixes for us gardener plant parents because seed starting season is almost upon us already, which I can't even believe. So if you're looking for high quality, organic, eco-friendly products for your plants, Espoma has you covered. To learn more about their organic products for indoor and outdoor use, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link below to go to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Favorites Amazon storefront to order online. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. Every opportunity I had, I was buying another plant to take home. Like, I had this, like, thirst for plants all of a sudden mm-hmm. because I feel like I was, like, woke to them all of a sudden. And once we hit 60 plants, Billy had to kind of have an intervention with me and say, hey, listen, I love you. I love this hobby that you're developing. I love how happy you are with the plants, but I'm starting to feel like hoarders, like in our tiny little 500 square foot apartment, and we really need to go on a plant pause. And now pretty much for the last year, I've been on a plant pause, and I was able to kind of stop that behavior because mm-hmm. I didn't want to my boyfriend to break up with me. But it did kind of feel like this moment where I was a little out of control of my ability to like stop myself because they were just making me so happy and I was like so obsessed. And I yeah. know I have an obsessive personality, but like it kind of was like next level. So could you kind of break that down? Like what was going on in my brain as the neuroscientist that you are that was like causing or fueling this new passion slash like a little bit of an addiction?
This is definitely a job that dopamine did.
Okay.
So dopamine is this neurotransmitter chemical signal in the brain that is involved in reward related processes. So basically any kind of rewarding thing that you engage in, whether it be eating food or having sex, you have a little burst of dopamine in your brain. And I'm sure you've heard in popular science, people say that dopamine is this pleasure chemical. And that's not necessarily the case. It's kind of a little bit of a misnomer. Dopamine is actually what we like to call a reinforcement signal, or in other words, a do it again signal. Like, that was good. I want more of that. Do that again.
Okay.
So probably what happened when you had this first success with your herb garden, mm-hmm. you had a little burst of dopamine in your brain being like, that's awesome. Like, I've never had that before. I want more of that. Right?
Okay.
And so that's the signal that was being transmitted across your brain was, I want to experience this again. Buy more plants. Plant more plants. And with each subsequent experience or time that you've bought a plant, you get another reinforcement signal, some more dopamine release flooding your brain saying, this was good. Do that again. I mean, there is like an evolutionary basis. So, you know, why does dopamine exist in our brain at all? Well, of course, we need it to fulfill things that are important for our survival. Like, this is why it's important or released when we eat food. It's like a signal in your brain that says, oh, you gave me some calories. I need that to sustain life. Here's some dopamine. Do that again.
Okay.
Or if you think of it from an evolutionary perspective, we know that dopamine's released when we have sex and it's your genes screaming at you, I want to be passed on to the next generation. You know, do that again. It's adaptive, but sometimes there's things like plants or drugs of abuse that completely hijack this system or hotwire it in a way that it wasn't really intended. So, for example, we know that most drugs of abuse, like alcohol, morphine, cocaine, these cause dopamine release, and that's hotwiring your dopamine pathway. And so very similar, this is what plants is doing to your brain, but just on a much smaller scale.
Oh, boy.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you just broke that down so brilliantly. I definitely have a few follow-up questions. So am I getting kind of addicted to that dopamine rush? And that's why I keep doing it. And this could be like with plants, obviously, but it could also be with, like you said, wine. Or for me, that's also like whenever I eat a French fry, like any form of salty potato definitely has that kind of do it again feeling too.
Yeah. So I don't want to necessarily go as far as calling it addiction, but it can cause compulsive behaviors. And what's really interesting about these things that flood our brain with dopamine is our brain has this really unique ability to react to these like overstimulation events. So for example, if you were to take a lot of cocaine, your brain will flood with dopamine and your brain is saying, I don't want this. This is too much. And what happens is the receptors, the thing that binds to these dopamine molecules in the synapse, they actually become overstimulated and they basically are removed from the synapse. So what happens in subsequent experiences, you have less of these receptors because you overstimulated it. So you need more dopamine to get the same high with subsequent exposure. So it kind of causes this like crazy cycle where you need to do more of something to get the same feeling.
To get the same rush.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, exactly. That's so real. So when you overstimulate that, oh, okay, hold on one second. We got to go back to – so first off, for the lady in the room with a degree in opera and not science, can you – you said dopamine is a neurotransmitter. So what's a neurotransmitter?
So a neurotransmitter is a chemical in the brain. It's basically our messenger system. So we have these neurons, and when they become activated, they release these chemicals into like an open space, which we call a synapse. So dopamine is one of them. There's also, serotonin and norepinephrine and glutamate and GABA. And these are all different chemical messenger systems that do different things. And when it gets released into the synapse, there's these things called receptors. And these molecules, these neurotransmitters, bind to the receptors. And this is how they affect subsequent cells, brain regions, and consequently cognition and behavior.
So there's neurotransmitters, synapses, and then what was the third? The binders?
Receptors.
The receptors.
Yeah. Think of it as a lock and key.
Right.
The lock is the receptors and the key are the neurotransmitters. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then what you were saying with that flooding is once you overstimulate yourself, there's less synapses. So it takes
the same amount of synapses. There's just less receptors. So we say that the receptors internalize, so they get sucked out of the synapse, they get eaten back up by the cell. And so there's less receptors. And so the receptors are responsible for, the dopamine's action. And if there's less of them, then you need, more dopamine in the synapse to have the same effect.
Got it. Okay. Once you kind of have those five plant purchases, then all of a sudden, it's not as exciting to just get one plant. Or it needs to be like an expensive plant or like a rare plant or like some extra level of like special. Mm-hmm. It can't just be like a little succulent or something.
Exactly.
So dopamine is the do it again signal that is causing me to continue to want to buy more plants. Or really, I mean, I love that this conversation could also be about like buying more clothes or buying more shoes or like eating another piece of chocolate. I mean, it's like so cool how wide we can kind of apply this conversation. But another thing that I thought was so interesting was how like connected I felt to my plants and how cozy, connected, like spiritually connected, like what was going on there? Because especially as someone who like never really cared much about nature, plant killer like would just toss the plant away. Like what was the change there?
Yeah, so this is how plants are a little bit different from perhaps buying shoes or handbags.
Okay.
So plants are kind of like this double whammy because they also cause a release of oxytocin. And oxytocin is another type of hormone that's really important for bonding. So when you tend to your plants, when you water them, when you talk to them, it's very likely that you're causing release of oxytocin. And we know that this is the case when you engage in nurturing behavior. So when you pet a dog, you're also causing a release of oxytocin. And the reason that this hormone exists is because it helps us bond with our babies. Okay. So again, it's going all the way back to evolution. There's an evolutionary mechanism of why we have oxytocin. As humans, we have a baby and it can't take care of itself at all. And so immediately after you give birth, you have this massive rush of oxytocin that's saying, you care about this thing, you should take care of it, because if you don't take care of it, it's not going to live very long. And so this nurturing drive releases oxytocin. And in the same way, when you repot your plants or when you water them, it's very likely that you're also having the same kind of oxytocin hormone rush.
So when you say it's twofold, it's compounded first with the dopamine and then with the oxytocin.
Yeah.
We're not nurturing clothes that we buy, so we're not going to have also the oxytocin with that kind of maybe compulsive spending habit or something like that.
Precisely.
Let's talk a little bit about compulsive buying and the stages of it and kind of what we can be on the lookout, or what I guess I can be on the lookout for as we all move forward in our urban jungles, wanting to make sure that we're doing it in a healthy way, or noticing like maybe different signs that we might want to like scale back.
So there's four major stages of compulsive buying behavior. This isn't just specific to plants, but all kinds of compulsive buying behavior. The first, of course, is anticipation, where you have these thoughts or urges where you feel maybe a little bit antsy that it's been a couple of days since you've bought a plant and you seem really focused on either buying a specific item or just putting yourself in an environment that allows for shopping. So you somehow end up at a hardware store that also has a nursery.
Right.
Instead of just going to a hardware store. So this anticipation, this negative emotional state that causes you to want to have retail therapy, it's this like anticipation phase.
Okay.
And then there's like the preparation phase where you perhaps research what plants you want to buy, where the plant that you really want is going to be. You maybe call up a friend and say, hey, let's go plant shopping, or look up some where some sales are. And then there's like the actual shopping. And of course, this is like where you're engaging in the thrill of the hunt. And this is where a lot of people report feelings of, you know, having a shopping high. So you're hyper aroused. You have like this ramping up of dopamine release. You may also have norepinephrine, which is important for attention and arousal. And so you just kind of feel on edge. You're shopping and you're excited. And then you make the actual purchase. You have this rush of dopamine that was like, ooh, that was fun. Like, let's do that again. And then you can also go into like this negative emotional state where if you spent too much money, or you get home and you realize this isn't maybe the plant that you were actually looking for, the one you actually wanted to get. And then you go back into this like negative emotional state that can cause like this cycle to continue.
Okay. So anticipation, preparation, shopping. And the fourth is like the negative, the regret that would like put you in.
Well, it's like the spending. So it's like you get that brief dopamine, like do it again signal. And then for some people, not everybody, you can transition back into this negative emotional state.
Could you kind of talk a little bit more about why plants are so good for our mental health?
Yeah, so we know that being out in nature dramatically decreases circulating stress hormones. There's also this hypothesis that suggests that it causes our brain to relax a little bit. So we have this brain region called the prefrontal cortex that sits just behind your forehead. And it's kind of like your brain's command center. It's really important for decision making and planning. So it's kind of always online, monitoring what we're doing, what's going on in our environment, and trying to make sure we're doing the best action at the right time. And so that's a huge load for your prefrontal cortex to carry. there's been quite a bit of research in humans that suggests that when you are out in nature, that the prefrontal cortex has a decrease in activity. So it relaxes and it kind of dials back the activity in your brain's command center and allows it to rest. It's really interesting because when you talk with people about going on nature hikes or spending time in nature, they'll often report things like, oh, I've been thinking about this problem. It's been really bothering me at work. And then when I went for a hike and it just kind of popped up, like the answer just came to me. The idea is that, you know, your brain is kind of relaxing and you can be a little bit more creative. And so in that way, experiencing nature, being around plants can be quite good for you.
Is this all like the same decrease in blank or does it vary?
It's going to be a little bit different in the brain. So while there's hormones in the brain, we tend to think of hormones having their actions in the periphery.
Okay.
So like circulating in your bloodstream, although there is hormones in the brain as well. This decrease in activity is most likely due to neurotransmitter release, various types of neurotransmitter release.
Now, I've heard it kind of people saying like my central nervous system relaxes when I'm in nature. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah, so that's basically the same thing. So it's just saying like you know, when you're busy like attending to like your environment or, you know, thinking about work stuff, your brain is using a ton of energy. Mm-hmm. When you're out walking around in nature, there's a general decrease in activity, particularly in these brain regions that are kind of like our command centers. And so that allows us to be more creative and potentially have a more positive emotional state.
When I'm in nature, so I like with my human brain, I feel like I always have 10 things I'm kind of thinking about. Maybe one's on the forefront, but then I have like 9 kind of like not dormant, but like it's almost like a phone that has like a lot of apps running, right? Mm-hmm. So like I always have like a bunch of stuff kind of like jumbling around my head. And when I am in nature or when I do like put my phone away and sit with my plants in the morning on my balcony or like if I do give myself, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of like plant care in the morning, it does feel like those apps kind of close. Like it does feel like everything kind of just like settles for a minute because I think with all that stuff in my brain, like constantly running, I have this like level of stress that I don't even recognize anymore because we're all just like humans trying to live our lives, like thinking about a lot of like complex things because we live in a complex place. So is that kind of the decrease in activity? Like, is that kind of what that is? Like the closing of the apps or just kind of like the settling?
Yeah, absolutely. So the prefrontal cortex, another one of its main functions is short-term memory. You know, the things that you describe as being apps in the background, that's being juggled by your prefrontal cortex. So your prefrontal cortex is keeping these topics or other things in mind in the background. And so when you have a reduction in your prefrontal cortex and its activity, it has to get rid of, you know, some of the energy that it's using to keep these things in the forefront of your mind. And so, yeah, that's exactly what happens is it allows you to release those momentarily. Again, the mechanisms by which this happens, we still are not sure. But considering the brain scan suggests that this is the case, this is our best hypothesis, is that it's kind of alleviating your short-term memory load, at least momentarily.
Oh my goodness gracious, Caitlin, this has been such an interesting conversation. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. All right, so that is truly one of my favorite episodes on all of Bloom and Grow Radio. I highly recommend you go back to episode 43 in the feed of this podcast and listen to the whole thing because it's so great. And we dive a little deeper. This is definitely the highlights of the episode that I chose to play for you. But just to recap what Caitlin and I discussed in regard to things to look out for if you are feeling like you might be tipping over to an unhealthy relationship with plants. So that anticipation phase where you're feeling unusually antsy around buying plants, anxious, obsessing, creating situations in which you show up in places to buy plants even when you shouldn't be. The preparation phase, researching what plants you want to buy, obsessing over when and how you're going to get your next plant in a way that feels unhealthy and not joyful. Shopping excessively, and then that crash that you feel after the purchase. A few other things that come to my mind is spending out of control. So showing up to a plant shop for a Hoya or a Pothos and leaving with $200 in plants and not being able to stop yourself. Obsessing and putting yourself in situations to buy plants that aren't normal. If you remember in the conversation with Caitlin, I shared that in my unhealthy time, I would literally like every restaurant I would be at or like every time I left my apartment, I would be like Googling like what the closest plant shop was and if I could like sneak in and almost like get a hit, you know what I mean? Some more things to keep your eyes peeled for. Feeling like buying a plant is what makes you feel better. Plants should never be your band-aid or remedy for feeling better. They could totally be tools to help you feel good in your self-care routine, but buying something to feel better, you shouldn't need to place that level of importance and worth and self-worth on plants. And then last but not least, if you're focused on quantity and not quality. So if you're too focused on growing your urban jungle and not on the plants that you already have and making sure that they're healthy and they're in good quality, I would say take a breath. Reevaluate. You got this, plant friend. We've all been there. I've been to literally every single one of the things I've just discussed I've experienced, so I'm not scared. Okay, so now let's talk about how to manage plant parent overwhelm. And like I said, all of these things are in the blog in case you ever need to go back to this episode for a little refresh. So I think number one, understand your number. And we talked about this in my recent episode, how to manage a large plant collection. Understand the number of plants that brings you joy and not stress. That's the key. Like that's it in plant parenthood. And what I'm learning is everybody's number is different. One of my plant friends on the internet literally has 6 plants and has a totally minimalist approach to her plant collection. And she says it brings her so much joy and it's what works for her. And then I have another friend who has 300 plus plants and she adores her plant care routine and has the time to devote to it. And that number works for her too. So really the number doesn't matter. It's not that you have this many plants and so therefore you're a good plant parent. You're a good plant parent when you know what the right number is for you. You see that difference? The key here is just that your plant care routine and your plant collection should help you relax. They should help you breathe deep. They should bring a smile to your face. And also, ideally, your plant collection should be able to stay healthy for the most part, with obviously the exception of a pest outbreak or anything like that. But find the number of plants that you can manage and that you have space for. And don't be afraid to give plants away. If you've realized that you have too many plants and your number is smaller than what you've currently got, donate plants, gift plants. There's always someone who would love a free plant. Put them on Facebook Marketplace, or if you can do it legally, sell them. But don't be afraid to part, because it also opens up an opportunity for you to assess the plants that work for you and bring in more plants that work for you and maybe get rid of the plants that don't work for you. Another tip I would have is accept that you're overwhelmed and forgive yourself, plant friends. Man, this happens to everyone. I honestly feel like overwhelm is part of plant parenthood. I don't think that if you get overwhelmed, if you notice, oh gosh, my collection's in a bad state, that that makes you a bad plant parent. I think it's what you do next, which is what defines that. And it's just all about creating a healthy relationship with your new hobby, and that could be seasonal. That is going to ebb and flow. Personally, I've had as much as 160 plants, and I currently have about 60 plants, and I've struggled and succeeded with both of those numbers. So I think these numbers can change. And along those lines, my next tip is assess where you are. What is currently bringing you stress about your plants? So has your collection gotten too large to manage? Then you should reduce it. Are you unable to stop buying plants? Then maybe considering putting yourself on a plant pause and focusing on your current collection is the way to go, even if it's just for a month or so. Believe me, plant pauses are harder than you think. The only word that I can describe them is itchy. When I was on my plant pause, it made me a little itchy in those first couple of months, but it is so worth it and was so life-changing, and I will dive more into how to take a plant pause in a little bit. Next tip I have is set a budget and stick to it. So if spending is an issue for you, set your budget and do not go over it to the best of your ability. Spending over and under budget could be a key indicator for your relationship to plant care and if it's teetering in healthy or unhealthy zones. So if you're unable to set a budget and stick to that budget, listen, we have all been there. No shade, no judgment, but it might be time to take a pause and take a deeper look at your approach to your plant collection and your hobby. Next tip, find a focus. So if your general plant collection is overwhelming you, maybe niche down to a focus. So get super curious about a certain genus of plants. Take a deep dive in Sansevieria or Hoya. Maybe experiment with propagating. Spend time learning about the plants you already have. Find a focus that you want to hone in on that kind of clears the excess around however you're showing up for your plant collection now that feels overwhelming to you. And then my last tip is work with what you got, plant friends. When I took my plant pause, the first thing I did was organize all my plants that I had in my collection. A part of my collection that was overwhelming me was I just kept bringing plants home and just like putting them on coffee tables with like no rhyme or reason, no design, no organization. I was just focused on getting more and more plants. So once I forced myself to go on a pause, I was able to assess my collection and figure out different ways to make the collection look more appealing in my home and make me stop feeling overwhelmed and feeling more joyful. So I did that by setting up a grow light for some highlight plants that I didn't have the right space for. I got some plant stands that helped kind of give depth to my walls. And then I also like dove into making my plants as healthy as possible. So I cleaned leaves, I pruned, I observed flowers, and I tried to just have these moments of stillness and observation with the plants that I had and tap into that sensation of awe and joy that I would get from getting a new plant, but transferring that onto my current plants. And you'd be pretty surprised how much awe you can trigger inside of yourself by just zoning out and staring at a Sansevieria snake plant leaf or a Calathea or whatever plant you have, a philodendron, any plant you have in your collection, you can drop in and have a moment of awe and joy with that plant if you just give yourself the time and space to. So try it. Okay, plant pause. Man, plant friends, I can't recommend a plant pause enough. This was probably one of the most transformative things I've done as a plant parent. It was about 6 to 8 months in. Billy asked me to go on a pause. It lasted for about 6 months. I think he would tell you that the pause was much shorter. There were definitely a few exceptions to the rule where like we had a conversation about me bringing a plant home because it was getting gifted to me, or a listener wanted to send it, or there was just a plant, Figaro, actually. Billy brought Figaro, our fiddly fig tree, into our home during the plant pause. But The difference was these new plants, even during the plant pause, were brought home with such intention. And the pause just made me stop in my tracks and assess my behavior and assess how I was showing up to my plants and my plant care routine. Everything changed. Like I said, I reorganized all of my plants, which enabled me to see them all better and care for them and notice when I got a yellow leaf or a brown leaf or a pest attack. I learned more about my plants. I Googled my plants. I dove deep about the plants that I currently had. I tried to learn their Latin names. I just stopped and paused for a minute. So I did learn some tips that I wanted to share with you if you're feeling intimidated by a plant pause, because I remember when Billy asked me to go on one, I was irate. I was furious. And I thought it was going to be so hard. And I'll tell you that it was a little bit hard in the beginning. I definitely, like I've said before, felt a little itchy that I still wanted to go. But like those feelings subsided. The first couple of weeks like sucked, but then those feelings subsided and they were replaced by real tranquility and excitement about, oh my God, like what have I been missing out? I've been so obsessed. I've been focusing all my attention on this aspect of the hobby, but there's this whole other aspect of the hobby that I've been leaving out that I haven't been paying attention to. And that aspect is actually caring for the plants that you have. Anyway, so here are some tips that I've put together for you for going on a plant pause. So number one, define your rules. A plant pause can look different for different people, depending on your needs and where you're at and what you want to do. So here are some options you can consider. The most extreme would be halt spending on all aspects of plant care. So no purchasing plants, accessories, pots, lights, the works. You stick to the pause and you really dive in, examine the behaviors, and also just like fall in love with the collection that you've got. So that would be the extreme version. And I would also say, if you want to go the extreme version, then I would say, don't cheat yourself and say, oh, but this is a freak plant cutting, so I'm going to bring it in. Like no new plants cross your threshold. So that's the extreme. Then there's a few middle grounds. So one option would be committing to not bringing in any form of plant, purchased or traded, home for a certain period of time. So for 2 months, no new plants are coming home. And if you need to get a grow light, like that's kind of what I did. So I needed to get a grow light. I needed to get some plant stands in order to kind of set my current collection up for success, but no plants crossed our door for 6 months-ish. And last is you could just assess your current plant number and actually decide to reduce it. So not only just maintaining the collection you already have, but actually reducing it and making plans to gift, donate, or sell your plants. So those are the three things that you can kind of ruminate on if you're thinking about doing this. My second tip would be probably one of the most important ones, involve your community. So share your goals with whoever you live with for sure, and probably your closest friends and your plant friends who might be enabling you. So Billy asked me to go on the plant pause. So my situation was a bit specific because I innately had that person on my side helping me with the plant pause because he was mandating it. In looking back, even though I was a little frustrated at first, I really saw the arguments he was making, and I really needed that accountability partner to help me break the bad spending habits I was getting into. Another positive side is if you're living with someone, if you bring them into your commitments, Billy and I then when we started bringing more plants home after the pause, it became a much more collaborative experience because it made me realize that I was just acting and bringing plants home and buying plants and not even talking to him about it. And after I had my pause and he and I just got to like breathe for a minute, I realized, oh, I should probably involve him in this hobby because he's living in my home too. And I haven't been a very respectful partner that I'm just like making these decisions about our interior design and not consulting him. So now we really enjoy like figuring out what plants we bring home together. And 100%, I still sneak plants in and hope that he doesn't see. And most of the time he catches me, but that was a really nice silver lining to that experience that Billy and I actually grew closer as plant parents from it. My next tip would be set a time frame. So I think sometimes people get intimidated by going on a plant pause and not setting an end date because it could feel really unattainable. But any of you listening to this could not buy plants for a month if you needed to. For me, it was 6 months with a couple of exceptions, like I mentioned. But pick your time frame. Even if 3 days feels unattainable, then just challenge yourself to do 3 days if that's what you need. And then challenge yourself to do another 3 days and let it grow and grow. I just feel like working within a deadline actually makes you feel more free than feeling terrified that you'll never be able to buy a plant again, if that makes any sense. My next tip is be kind to yourself. We've all been there. We've all gotten into bad habits, and we all know how hard those habits can be to break. This is in or out of plant care. So the plant pause might not be easy, and you might not necessarily be successful all the time. The thing that you just have to keep returning to and thanking yourself for and being kind to yourself about is you're trying to better yourself. In doing this pause, you're trying to, you know, get the train back on the tracks, and any step towards self-improvement is better than none. So you are amazing. I believe in you, and you've got this. And my last tip, but not least, is it's about quality, not quantity. Keep telling that to yourself over and over again, because that's what I literally told myself probably once a week in the middle of the plant pause when I was like, oh, I really want to get that plant. I would say it's quality, not quantity. So find the number that works for you and stick with it until you can add or subtract from that number in a healthy place. So focus on creating a thriving collection of happy plants that brings you joy. That's it. Numbers don't matter. It can truly mean two plants for some people, and I'm so serious about that. Okay, so now if you've decided that you're going to do a plant pause, and also, by the way, like, I'm not telling anyone to do a plant pause. If you're growing successfully, like, you do you, like, keep buying plants. I'm about to move, and I've been on a pause for a while, and I'm ready to start buying plants again soon. So if and when you choose to start your plant pause and you're like, okay, I'm in a plant pause, now what? Here are some fun things that you can do in your plant pause to keep yourself curious and growing and active. So see how you can figure out how to streamline and design your collection. So incorporate planters, plant stands, grow lights, like whatever you want to make your home look more appealing. Learn the Latin names of your plants. That was a super fun thing that Billy and I did that we really liked. Learn to propagate your current plants. So play with propagation. Learn how roots work. Go back and listen to the episode on rootology with Leslie Halleck, which is amazing. You can figure out a great fertilizing routine for your plants and learn more about soil and figure out growing media you want to use. You can repot your plants and give them the TLC that they need, wash their leaves, prune back, do all those good things. And last but not least, just learn. So watch plant tube videos. We have so many amazing plant tubers in our community. Binge the 111 episodes of Bloom and Grow Radio. Read blogs. Just continue expanding your knowledge and not expanding your plant collection. So those are some ideas of what to do while you're pausing if you start to get itchy. And last but not least, I just want to say that plant parent overwhelm can absolutely be seasonal. So our plants go through seasons, and so do we. And I personally know that I have absolutely gone through seasons of life where I am obsessed with checking my plants every day. And then I have other seasons where I'm not, because life gets in the way. And that's so okay. Plant care and our plant collection is not going to look the same all the time for us. And I think Instagram creates a unrealistic expectation of how we're supposed to show up and how we're supposed to be. If you're in a season of dormancy, if you're in a slow season, you're going to wake back up. Spring is going to come. You know, just keep trusting that seasons are seasons for a reason, and there's opportunities and things to be learned in all of them. And speaking of seasons, we are approaching a new year. We are in the midst of winter. Those are both wonderful times to get introspective and cozy and thoughtful. And it's just a beautiful time to stop, reset, hibernate, experience dormancy, and reevaluate and set goals for yourself. Those goals might be to keep your collection, to grow your collection, to reduce your collection, to get curious about some aspect of growing, get curious about some aspect of plant care, or like they could just not have to do with plant care at all and just be about your life. But I know for me, December has always been a very introspective, emotional month. And boy, oh boy, watching 20 close in, whew, I got those watery eyes every day thinking about 2020 and getting excited for 2021. So I hope that this episode has been helpful for you. I highly encourage you to go back and listen to that whole Your Brain on Plants episode, episode 43, because it's so great. And I hope that you have some interesting tactics, and through listening to this, you've learned something about yourself today. Please let me know what that might be and if this was helpful. I'm always here for you at maria@bloomandgrowradio.com via email or at bloomandgrowradio on Instagram. I would love to hear from you. We are going to take only a few week pause before we debut the next season, season 6. Holy moly. And we're coming back next year. Bloom and Grow is going to be full time, plant friends. I am going to be able to dedicate myself to this community and this podcast and this company in a way that I have not been able to do in previous years, and I am so freaking excited. Get ready. A lot of fun things to come that I cannot announce yet, but I will in the next coming months. So until then, I wish you a beautiful New Year's. I hope you've had beautiful moments with your families and your friends and yourselves this month. And I just can't wait to grow alongside you and learn alongside you in 2021. So until next time and until 2021, my sweet plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.